Okay, so you're doing the staff-driven practice. You're doing the hygiene cauldron.
Right.
And what else?
We do sedation, and I've done I have marketed sedation more aggressively in the past than I do right now. We still do see a lot of sedation patients, and actually we see probably most of these from our website. We get more patients in on the website from sedation right now than we do from anything else.
How does that work? I mean, how do they come from the website? Are you doing some other advertising that drives them to the website?
Well, okay, I'll tell a secret here.
Okay.
There's a lot of dentists right now doing radio ads.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, the patients don't get those numbers written down. But they do go home and they type in sedation dentist on the computer to see.
And your name comes up.
And my name comes up. Because the majority of the time they'll come in and they'll say, I heard your radio ad. I've never run an radio ad in my life for sedation dentistry, and I hear that all the time. And there's some ways to do that with Google and with Overture.com so that you can be the number one sedation dentist in your area. And I don't find that dentists are marketing that at all, hardly. So, yeah, if in our area, if you type in sedation dentistry, you will find my practice in the top three.
Okay, you said you dropped back on the advertising of sedation. Is it because you're just completely flat out?
It's because I was completely, for two reasons. It's pretty expensive, and we were doing newspaper advertisements that were bringing a lot of patients in, but it was bringing a lot of consultations in, and the fact of the matter is I just did not have time in the schedule. You know, you get to a point that every person you see displaces another person.
Right.
And I didn't want to spend a lot of time displacing patients that were coming in for treatment with patients that were coming in for consultations. So that's one reason we stopped marketing that. Now, if we were to have the space and I needed to bring patients in, I think sedation, the thing about sedation that is nice is I think sedation works if you have not a very visible location, if you have a smaller office. Sedation works in a lot of different situations.
But a lot of other things have already worked for you, so trying to squeeze sedation in there is at the cost of something else.
Right now it is because of our space.
Tim, you know, you have a very well-run practice with great staff, so you're a good person to ask this question to. See, when we have poorly run practices and we talk to them about sedation and sedation ads, we never know whether it's the practice, the doctor, the staff, or the ads. What have you learned about marketing sedation dentistry?
Okay. I'll tell you one of the biggest things I learned, and I actually learned this from you. When we first started marketing sedation dentistry, we couldn't get the people to show up or we couldn't get them to commit. And what I learned is there's a couple of things about sedation. The first thing is it's not the doing of sedation, because I've been doing sedation for over 10 years now. It's the marketing of sedation. So you have to realize these people are not in our practices. These people are out there, you know, looking for a practice that, you know, maybe they would feel comfortable in.
Right.
The second thing is when they call in, the person that talks to them on the phone is really crucial, because it's the way they're treated on the telephone will make a difference on whether they come to your practice or not. And that's huge. I can tell you the demand is out there. There's so many dentists. There are more dentists promoting that. I think the demand is far outstrips the number of dentists that are willing to treat sedation patients.
But when the patient calls, they don't necessarily like what they hear, is what you're telling me.
Right. If they get any feeling whatsoever, and it may not be overt, but if they get a feeling from the person answering the phone that, maybe we don't want to see, or, ooh, boy, but you're kind of putting some things in front of me that maybe I don't want to hear, they just go away. I mean, they're not going to come into the office until they need to feel really safe.
What did you learn about the ads themselves? Because probably the number one complaint we get from doctors is saying, the phone didn't ring. I ran the ads and it just didn't happen.
Well, that never was an issue for us. I ran a newspaper ad that discussed what sedation was and what to expect, and I got that from one of your clients.
Can you describe the headline and picture and what that ad looked like to the best of your ability?
It said, are dental fears keeping you from having a healthy mouth? And then it was a few paragraphs, and it discussed patients' dental fears and sedation dentistry and what they could expect from sedation dentistry, and the fact that many people, it's been years since they've seen a dentist, and it had a photograph of a patient and a photograph of myself, and It was very. It's and.
The and first, that ad really worked.
It still works. You know, we still have patients that I saw a patient last week. I haven't run this ad in a year. That cut it out of the newspaper and put it in. She told me she put it in her sock drawer, and finally decided to come in. And people will see those and
she
cut
kept
them out.
Save it. She kept it a year before she called.
Kept it a year. Cut it out and saved it and kept it a year and then finally called. I think what she thought is, ooh, boy, next time I need to go to the dentist, maybe I'll use this guy.
Tim, interesting here. You seem to have conquered all the problems of sedation, but still not really embraced it.
I'll tell you the truth. I love doing sedation dentistry, but I generally just do it one day a week, and that's because I don't have to check hygiene, and I can sit down and spend two, three, 4 hours with the patient. It's difficult to do sedation. In fact, I won't do sedation during a
quote-unquote normal
day because I have too many hygiene checks, and I really want to spend all my time with the patient.
I see.
I do enjoy hygiene. Enjoy sedation. Those patients really absolutely are so grateful. They're the most grateful patients you'll ever treat.
Tim, well, I'd really like to do this interview with you again 6 months after you've expanded your space and added a second doctor. I'd be willing to bet you'll add $100,000 a month across the board.
We might. You never know.
Oh, I'd bet on it.
You never know.
All right. Tell me about other strategies you might have pursued. You've done sedation, hygiene cauldron. You've done the staff-driven practice. What else?
I'll tell you one that has worked recently very, very well for us, and that's in with all of our new patients in addition to the x-rays and the study models and the photographs and all that, we do free teeth whitening for new patients. That has been really huge.
You market this?
We market this. And I never thought that there would be that much interest in it. That just, to me, didn't really seem like something that people would be interested in. People are unbelievably interested in it.
Tell me about that. How do you actually market it? What do you...
We have an ad that runs in the paper. This is just a local community-type paper.
Okay.
And it is like a lot of other ads run by the dentist about, here we are, this is a dental office, and this is what we do. But in ours it says free teeth whitening for all new patients.
So if they are a new patient, and how do you define that to the patient?
It's a patient that we haven't seen before.
So if somebody comes in and says, I want to be a patient, they get the whitening. They can't just come in and say, I only want the whitening?
No, they have to have, you're right, they have to have x-rays, an examination, and they have to have their teeth cleaned.
So this is really working out.
Oh, it's worked out.
How long have you been doing that?
We started it, I think, 6 months ago, and I was going to do it just briefly before Christmas, and it's been so successful, we've kept it up. That's where I said we usually see about 40 to 60 new patients a month, but we're now seeing 100.
Wow.
That's where some of that extra is coming from.
Okay. There was a time when you did mini implants. Do you have any comment on that?
You know, I love the concept of doing mini implants because it really, once again, brought another group of patients into the office that hadn't been in the office before.
Right.
I'm not happy with the success rate of them. They're still very successful. But there's about a 20% failure rate where they have to be replaced. And that's just not something although you certainly talk to them about it, a friend of mine is a surgeon, said, well, the problem with mini implants is a lot of times you get mini results from them. And I think he's right. So I'm much more comfortable now just doing regular implants.
I see. And one more question back on this whitening area. Was there any problem actually trying to deliver those whitenings? What kind of whitenings are they getting for free?
They're getting the full deal.
Are they getting custom bleaching trays?
Custom bleaching trays, absolutely. And a friend of mine was asking me, well, how the heck do you do that? And I go, I don't know. Once again, this is the hygienist that do this, the hygienist and the hygienist assistant. And,
and they're on commission. How do you get them interested in doing these free whitenings?
Because a new patient, think about a new patient with a FMX or maybe a Pano and a full new patient exam and a Profi is worth more than a recall.
So they're commissioned on the Pano also?
They're commissioned on the Pano.
Wow.
They're commissioned on everything. So, yes, you're going to have to do a little bit more work. But, think about, it's higher production. And I'll also say that we do it with a smile. Occasionally I'll have a hygienist go, they need a crown and a root canal. Let's make them get this crown and a root canal before we do the whitening. I'll say, no, that's not the deal. The deal is they come in as a new patient, and we whiten their teeth. It's kind of like a Cialdini. It's he calls the number one law reciprocity. Right. I'm going to do something for them. Now, if they want to do something back for me, follow my treatment recommendations, that's great. But if they don't want to, that's okay. That's the deal is we promised them this, and we're going to do that. Truthfully, the only real issue we've run into with the free whitening is patients of the practice said, hey, listen, I've been a patient of yours for 5 years. You never did free whitening for me. What's up with that? And that is an issue from time to time. Someone will voice that complaint.
What do you say to them?
Right now we're just doing, we'll say, you know what, you're right. You know what, we'll do bleaching for you for $99. And usually that makes most of them happy.
Good. So that's been big. The mini implants kind of came and left in the practice.
You know, and I still think that in the right location, mini implants work well. But in this location, we don't have a lot of edentulous patients, for one, so they had to be marketed in there pretty heavily. I'm just not happy with the longevity I was seeing out of the mini implants.
Great. Bill just put something in front of me to ask you. With these incredible staff you have, he says, did you have to go through a lot of staff to find these good ones?
Yes.
So you had some turnover.
I don't have a problem. You know, and what happened at the first dental team training camp for us is probably something that I've continued. When we met after the first team training camp, we were so excited about the possibilities for the practice and the bonus and all of that. There was one staff member who was clearly out of step. And it's a little bit different because usually when you talk about the staff member that's out of step, we're talking about someone that's hostile or incompetent or they're doing something that you can, it's just nefarious and, you know, you kind of feel good about getting rid of them. And we had a person working for us that was so sweet and so nice and so not going to work with this because she just wasn't that fast and she was just kind of plodding and you didn't want to give her too much at once because she might forget. And it was just really obvious if we were going to go in this direction, we needed people that were unbelievably highly competent. And so I made a decision, and when we got back, I let her go. And the thing is, if you're going to put a team together in the sense of, because I hear the word team all the time being used, if you're really going to put a team together, you're constantly looking for the best player. And one thing that doing that does is it makes everyone else on the team, they really feel a sense of pride. And when you get rid of someone, not because they're really doing something bad, just because they're really not doing enough that's good. You know, I don't want to have someone that's sort of a no influence, not a negative influence, not a positive influence. They're just kind of, they're just there. Those people are very hard to get rid of because they're very nice. They're not necessarily doing anything wrong. You kind of feel bad about it. But they're really not going, you can't count on them to take you to the next level.
I see.
So I definitely will make the decision to try to replace those people.
So you're not just going for people that can get the job done?
Absolutely not.
We have a saying, you can't do $100,000 a month with a $30,000 a month staff. And
no.
You've kind of proven that.
No.
One more question, Tim, about case acceptance and case presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Have you listened to our work on 100% case acceptance, tell them what they need, give them what they want, all of that?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me what you've learned about getting good case acceptance, because my impression here is that yours is very high.
Well, the first thing is it's all sold during the examination. It's not what the person that sits down and does the consultation with them, that is not the person that gets them to decide if they're going to do it or not. They decide whether they're going to do it or not, and they decide prior to you being in the room or after you're in the room. One of our rules is that, if possible, the doctor is never the first person to tell the patient they have a problem because they need to hear it and think about it for a minute. So a lot of times if the hygienist sees an obvious problem, they'll go ahead and mention it to the patient. By the time I come in the room and mention it again and we have a picture of it again, it makes a lot more sense. Now, I'm not a really aggressive diagnoser. In fact, I probably could work on that a little bit. I probably should be a little bit more aggressive. So I'm not, you know, looking at three surface amalgams that are intact and telling people they need crowns on them. That's never been something that I've been interested in.
But yeah, with 100 new patients, I don't know how you could.
Yeah, I don't do that. But things that, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I pick up the camera, I show them, I explain it to them, I explain what's going to happen. And the truth of the matter is, I really don't care if they do it or not. I mean, if they do it, that is great. If they decide not to do it and want to do it later, you know, that's fantastic as well. I just, you know, I have a job. I have to show them what I see, have to present it to them, and, you know, they're the patient. They need to make up their mind if they would like to have it done, and they need to understand the benefits of doing it. They need to understand the risk of not doing the treatment right now, and then they can make up their mind, and, you know, I still want them to come back and see me, you know, as their doctor. And I'd still like to do the treatment whenever they want to have it done.
Tim,
and
how
that's
about,
pretty much how it's presented.
How about some verbiage? In other words, I'm a patient, and maybe I came in for an exam and wasn't really expecting that you're going to find much.
Hmm.
But yet you do. You got four teeth that need help.
Okay. Well, the first, what I usually do will sit the patient up in the chair, and if they can see the x-ray, if you can actually see it on the x-ray, I'm going to say, okay, let me show you what's going on here. And I'll take the Panorex or the FMX, and I'll put it on the view box, and I'll say, this is you. And this is you looking at me and you, and this is your upper right, this is your upper left, this is your lower left, and this is your lower right. And I'm going to just show you tooth by tooth what I'm seeing here. And I just walk around the mouth tooth by tooth, pointing with my finger and explaining, you know, the white things are fillings, that white thing is a gold crown. Do you see this black thing? Do you see that this black thing is into the nerve of the tooth here? Does that hurt? It doesn't. Well, that's kind of unusual that it doesn't hurt, but you're fortunate it doesn't hurt. Well, let me explain to you what, and I just go through and I explain what I see and that what I would do with that. And I don't take a lot of time to do it. I do it very matter-of-factly, and if there's a lot of detail that needs to be explained to a patient, I will usually have a staff member do that. But I will walk them around just using an FMX or a pano and explain to them tooth by tooth. Then I'll also use my monitor and point to specific teeth that they've taken an intraoral picture of.
Okay, and I wasn't expecting this, and now you're telling me I need this. How are you going to say it? How are you going to close the? How are you going to ask the patient to decide?
You know, I don't know that I would ask them to decide. What I usually do is I would probably say something like, I hate to be the bearer of bad news here, but this is what I see that you need to have done. And I'll have them go over the scheduling and the cost and the fees with you. And if you want to sit down and do it all at once, that would be great. We'll do that for you. If you want to fix one tooth a year for the next 20 years, we'll do that for you. Whatever you want to do, at any rate you want to proceed, I'm happy to do that for you.
I got it.
And that's usually how I do it. In fact, that's usually very close to the verbiage I will give them. They always say the same thing. They say, oh, no, I'd like to pretty much do it. So that's what we do.
Okay. And that's good enough. That gets the job done.
Right. And, you know, I think the thing with doing consultations with patients that I think people make much ado about nothing. I think we need to be more like physicians. I think we need to show them and explain to them the conditions that are there, explain to them what can happen if they don't treat it, explain to them how our proposed treatment will take care of those conditions, and simply let them make up their mind with no coercion. We don't really need salesmanship. I really think that salesmanship is wasted in dentistry, and I think it's not very professional. I think we need a professional guidance and professional explanation. But I don't really want to sell anyone anything, because if they decide they don't like it, they're going to be mad at me.
Right. So you try not to show work that someone didn't first show to them, like a staff person or a hygienist or somebody.
Yeah, that we try not to do that. Now, sometimes I walk in there and the hygienist hasn't seen something, and I use loops. I do all my examinations and treatment under with loops and magnification. And sometimes I'll see something they didn't see, and I'll stop and show them and explain to them. But most of the time, if it's pretty obvious, they'll have already at least touched on that.
So these are some of the secrets that you've learned in case acceptance, is try to get somebody else to present it first, if at all possible.
Well, and a lot of times, the main reason is because you don't want to get bogged down into a long discussion about why they need it. Hopefully, that discussion has already taken place, and you can come in the operatory and confirm what they need, and you don't have to get in this long discussion about why they need it again.
Great. Tim, we're going to have to wrap this up here pretty quick. Tell me, in closing, what would you tell somebody who, you know, was out there at 60 or 70 or 80,000 a month and they're stuck, tried everything? What would you say to them?
Well, I would tell them they don't have to be stuck. Probably the biggest thing that they can do is realize that they can move beyond that point. And the second thing is, there's a lot of guys out there that have moved beyond the point that'll be happy to sit down over a cup of coffee and just visit with you and discuss, you know, maybe some of the ways that they did it. And they're probably in your community as well. And it's always helpful to talk to people in your own community, because then you really believe it can happen. You know, if you talk to someone across the country, you're going to think it's a special situation, and that I don't know if you would really believe it can happen. But there's people in your community that are doing extraordinary production, and they don't really talk about it because there's really no reason for them to.
So that really helped you to go out and see it happen.
Well, to see it happen and to realize it was really real, because, you know, like I said, I was stuck at a point for years, and I just thought that was the best you could. I just didn't really think you could do any more than what I was doing. And when you realize you can, it's a real eye opener.
Great. Tim, you've done a great job of explaining your methods, technique, telling us about your practice. We just want you to know how much we appreciate you being with us.
Well, Greg, we appreciate you and everything that you've done for us and everything you've done for dentistry.
Well, my pleasure. Tim, thanks a lot.
Thank you.